of many things and many people, to win and to hold the respect of intelligent persons, and to know and to share the affection of children, to earn the approbation of honest critics, and to endure without flinching the blows of sorrow and the shattering of hopes, to appreciate beauty always, whether in nature's creations or man's handiwork, to have sought for and found the best in others, and to have given the best of oneself, to leave the world finer than one found it, whether by a garden patch or some touch of loveliness or some redeemed social condition, to have played with enthusiasm, worked with purpose, and sung with exultation, to finally go back into the keeping of the universe and into the lasting memory of friends and loved ones, knowing that the world is a bit better and that some lives are a bit richer because one has lived well. This is to have succeeded with the great challenge and responsibility that come with the gift of human life. We gather here today to do honor and respect to the life and the memory of one who, by these standards, succeeded and succeeded in considerable measure. On such an occasion, words do not flow easily. And it is as much by our presence as by anything said that we express our feelings of lasting regard and remembrance. And yet we are moved to speak, however falteringly, not only because remembrance seeks expression, but because it is through human lives that truth and goodness and excellence are made most real. And it is from such lives that we would seek to learn, and by their example, we would hold sustaining strength against any deadening voice of weakness and despair. We gather with sorrow, of course, because the death of a loved one ever leaves a gap in our lives, and even with an acceptance of the inevitable round of life and death, we always find it hard to take physical leave of those who have been very near and very dear to us. Such is part of the age-old universal condition of life and love and separation. And the heart would not be the human heart if it did not react with sorrow and with great depth of feeling. Still, we cannot dwell on sorrow and we cannot cling to grief. There is ever life to be lived, and we confer no benefit whatsoever upon the dead or the living by giving way to sorrow and self-pity. We can only be of strength and comfort to others by bearing ourselves bravely and manfully, and by carrying on with the responsibilities of life in a strong and courageous manner. This is what is needed of us by the living, and this is what would be most desired of us by those who have loved us deeply and are now physically parted from us. They would only love us into a continuing courage of spirit and into a lasting bravery of effort. The greatest dishonor, I am certain, that we could do to the life and the memory of Betty Silverstone would be to weaken in any measure in our courage and to falter in our resolution. For she herself, I am certain, in her years of existence, also knew sorrows and losses, but she, I am certain, never sought to meet them with a full resiliency of the human spirit. She encountered them with the fullest depth of feeling, but she added them to the halls of memory and inspiration and carried them forward into a continuing regard and enthusiasm for life itself. From us, she would desire and expect the same. She would want and expect us to face up to the inevitabilities and responsibilities of life in the most sensible manner possible. She would want us to enjoy and to add to every enjoyment that might yet be forthcoming. She would ask that her memory be enshrined in only good thought and kind warmth, and that all remembrance of her be of a strengthening and uplifting influence. If we could not now meet with quiet dignity of spirit and with a transcending happy remembrance of her, then I am very certain that she would prefer that we did not meet at all. And if we were not to move forth from this hour with firmer determination to fulfill ourselves in both work and play, then I am likewise certain that she would look upon this gathering as denial of her deepest wish and negation of her own conviction that continuing life and love must ever transcend death and grief. At such a time as this, we must also know that what we feel is loss is also a reflection of how much we have had in the way of friendship and regard and contribution from so many very good friends who year after year are physically parted from us. Our sense of loss is a measure of what we have been so richly privileged to have had. And it is upon this richness of association that we should, in all true gratitude, ever center our attention and our remembrance. Each and every one of us should be endlessly grateful for the friendships we have known, for the good influences by which we have been benefited, and for the unique personalities with which we have been privileged to spend some of our happiest and most shining hours. Nothing whatsoever can detract from the good times and the rich experiences once shared with these individuals. And nothing whatsoever can deny the variety and depth of experiences that they themselves knew and relished and realized. That which has been, has been. It has been fashioned and made complete in itself. What there has been of mutual regard and respect is something that cannot be altered by either time or depth or circumstance. Most certainly, that which has been deep in our lives ever remains deep in our lives. The ties of memory and love are not severed. Those we have known and loved are ever ours. They endure in our acts and in our thoughts. They are carried across all our remaining years, and they are carried beyond that to yet unknown generations. For we are all involved in a great chain of life acting upon life, of influences that carry on endlessly. And the dead still remain out of the influence of their lives, strong and lasting and guiding influences. This they are as long as memory lasts, as long as the causes with which they were associated endure, as long as the very universe itself continues upon its endless ways. Such then should be the basic reflections of such an hour. Reflections of treasured friendship, of honored and kind regard, and of lasting and beneficial influence. Said Stanton Coit, one of England's great ethical teachers, We shall give to our friends and loved ones the most worthy honor and tribute if we think only of how they have lived, that thereby the force and flow of their action may be carried over all the gulfs of death and be made immortal in the true and earthly life which they have so worthily used. The dead, said Coit, are never dead if we continue in our love of them. In our own lives we give them immortality. And sometimes they are never so powerful to influence and inspire us as when they are finally physically withdrawn from us. For then we feel with new intensity all the elements of goodness in their lives. Then they take their place like shining and guiding stars in a region of only clear purity and of lasting peace. It was not my privilege to be personally acquainted with Betty Silverstone. And this I much regret, not only because I would like to speak of her with an intimate knowledge that I do not possess, but because from everything I have heard about her, she was a person of many fine qualities, and had a touch, I gather, of the unconventional that I am sure would have made for a degree of mutual congeniality between us. It is thus left to those who knew her well to have their own long, intimate thoughts about her. And it is only for me to say very briefly what I sense something of her character and worth. Born in Washington, D.C. some 50 years ago, she came of a family distinguished by academic brilliance, and to that ongoing heritage she made her own particular contribution. With a family moved to Minneapolis when she was still a very young child. It was here in the Midwest that she had her upbringing and established some of her deepest attachments, and had her first formal education through grade and high school. An outstanding, brilliant student, she went on to Radcliffe, where she was Phi Beta Kappa, and then continued with a medical degree from the University of Minnesota, specializing in pediatrics, but more and more moving into the field of child psychiatry. She interned at Bethesda Hospital in St. Paul and at the Baltimore City Hospital, did residency at Presbyterian Hospital in Chicago and at Children's Hospital in Montreal. In time, she went on to do work at the Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston and became a member of the staff of child psychiatry of the Boston Dispensary and the Cleft Palate Institute of the Dental School of Tufts University. She did a considerable amount of research work and, from what I gather, was highly capable in her professional career. Meanwhile, married and the mother of three children, she exercised a responsible concern as a parent, being companion and guide to the very best of her ability. She had, I am told, a particularly strong compassion for children, for all children with whom she came in contact, feeling with them and for them, sharing in their activities, ever seeking to be kind and helpful. Young in spirit, she was given to much enthusiasm in both act and thought, outgoing in personality and kind and considerate in her basic attitude. She was a friend of many, both young and old. Many she helped by just her creative listening to her their troubles. After visiting with her, they always emerged feeling better, drawing upon her great reservoir of both wisdom and strength. For this geographical area and for many of its inhabitants, both summer and year round, she had a deep feeling and a great attachment. Here to this area, the St. Croix Valley, she came time and again from childhood on, And here she knew and relished the beauties and the more reflective aspects of nature. Suggestive of her feeling are some lines from those composed by Wordsworth above Kinternally Abbey in the valley of the Wye River. These beauteous forms have not been to me as is a landscape to a blind man's eye, but oft in lonely rooms amid the din of towns and cities, I have owed to them in hours of weariness sensations sweet, felt in the blood and felt along the heart, and passing even into my purer mind with tranquil restoration. Feelings, too, of unremembered pleasure, such perhaps as have no slight or trivial influence on that best portion of a man's life, his little, nameless, unremembered acts of kindness and love. Nor less, I trust, to them I have owed another gift of aspect more sublime. That blessed mood in which the burden of the mystery, in which the heavy and the weary weight of all this unintelligible world is lightened. That serene and blessed mood in which the affections gently lead us on, until the breath of this corporeal frame and even the motion of our human blood almost suspended, we are laid asleep in body and become a living soul, while with an eye made quiet by the power of harmony and the deep power of joy, we see into the life of things. And finally come the lines continuing in a like vein, but addressed by Wordsworth to his loved sister Dorothy, the close companion of many of his walking tours. Let the moon shine on thee, and let the misty mountain winds be free to blow against thee. And in after years, when these wild ecstasies shall be matured into a sober pleasure, when thy mind shall be a mansion for all lovely forms, thy memory be as a dwelling place for all sweet sounds and harmonies. Oh, then, if solitude or fear or pain or grief should be thy portion, with what healing thoughts of tender joy wilt thou remember me, and these my exhortations? Nor perchance, if I should be where I no more can hear thy voice, nor catch from thy wild eyes these gleams of past existence, wilt thou then forget that on the banks of this delightful stream we stood together, and that I, so long a worshipper of nature, hither came unwearied in that service? Nor wilt thou then forget that after many wanderings, many years of absence, these steep woods and lofty cliffs in this green pastoral landscape were to me more dear, both for themselves and for thy sake. What Betty may have thought about the possibility of the continuance of conscious personality beyond death, I do not really know. But from what I gather about her outlook, I feel quite certain that she had no fear of death as such, and was quite willing to leave any final answer to the keeping of the vast universe into which we all are born, through which we all have our being, and into which our bodily elements must once again merge. I am very certain that she had no doubt whatsoever about the reality of the influence that we create with our lives. Firm was her belief that whatever final answers the vast universe may hold, the matter of the kind of life we lead is of primary and fundamental importance, and most certainly should be on the side, as far as possible, of human good and not of human evil. Would the poet she would ask us to be able to say, when I have left these scenes I loved and roamed to pass beyond the dusk, may I have won more than applause in temples gaudy domed. May I recall that I have built, have made some shoot the greener, some lens more clear, have checked the reddening of some hand or blade, and rose with laughter over loss and fear. May some great tree that unobserved I sowed smile in its April bridal. May some mind glitter more keenly that I mark the road, though I be covered by the fog behind. May I be one, when I must seek the void, who lighted lamps with nothing good destroyed. Indeed, whatever else there may be, this is ever our present duty and responsibility, but also our greatest source of satisfaction and happiness, to add something to the positive side of human life, to leave an immortality of influence that is good and worthwhile and enduring. All this Betty did in abundant measure in the compressed rolls of her life, even amid difficulties and complexities that confronted her, and she can have only lasting peace in the halls of kind and gentle memory. Let us join in some closing words of meditation. Great thought of all that is kind and good in this common human existence of ours, we bow our heads in grateful remembrance of those who have greeted life with purpose and have lived with resolution and meaning and courage. Such memory ever remains to bless and to sustain us in our living. We are deeply grateful to those who have exemplified a comradeship of family and home, who have raised children with a wise love, and who themselves have retained some of the exuberance of childhood, who have lightened life with their gentle humor and have brought sunshine into darkened moments of our experience. May we ever seek to express our gratitude for such lives finely lived, for suffering met with courage, for problems squarely met, for enduring values sustained beyond the pitfalls of our human condition. May golden memory ever be bright within us, helping us to good and generous living. May we rise in spirit above any walls of self-pity that may threaten to shut us in. May we welcome the days and years that remain to us, and to the utmost of our ability, fill them with large thoughts and with useful and kind deeds. May each of us be united with others by ties of mutual affection and service. May grief be taken up into gratitude, and may we seek to truly find our lives by properly knowing how to lose them. Loving greatly, we would not be spared the sorrow that comes to us because we have loved greatly. Rather, we would have our minds filled with the lasting treasures that such love alone brings. We would seek to be the more understanding of one another. We would win from life's joys and sorrows the wisdom of patience and sympathy, the courage to live faithfully, and the knowledge that even life's darkest hours are not devoid of heroic meaning. May the strength of new resolution be upon each of us, that we may exemplify in our lives added strength and tenderness, courage and compassion, firmness and self-forgetting love. Thereby may we seek to justify the worth of our own existence and rightly do honor to the life and memory of those who have been and still remain so very near and so very dear to us.